and welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, we've got, I think, somebody who's going to prove to be a fascinating guest today. We're going to be talking about DNA and behaviour.
Yeah, do you remember that Fawlty Towers episode where he has the psychiatrist, I think, in?
Yeah.
And he gets really self-conscious. I'm thinking that way right now. This guy's going to sort of know stuff about us that we don't want him to know. I want to welcome Hugh Massey to the next 100 Days podcast. Welcome, Hugh.
Welcome, guys. Graham and Kevin, it's great to be with you. And I know with our historical backgrounds, if you want to call it that, from England and Australia, we're going to have a bit of sense of humour come out here, and hopefully everybody gets it.
Yeah, well, if they don't, I don't care. So basically, Hugh, is this your business? Did you come up with the business is called DNA Behavior, spelt wrong, of course, but basically spelt in the American way. Is this your business?
Yes, it's my business. So I came up with all the ideas and thinking behind it, and invested in it, and got the people and a lot of the clients, and here we are.
Wow. And are you based in America, or is that where you are?
No, I'm based in America. So the ideas, though, came when I was in Australia, in Sydney.
Okay. Yeah.
But the journey took me to America, and that's where I ended up staying for the past 20 years.
Wow. Well, you're an expat from Australia. I mean, you should be in Earl's Court, shouldn't you? Isn't that where all the Australians live, in London?
That is where they go in London, absolutely, to Earl's Court.
Yeah, but exactly where in America did you say?
So Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, right? Okay, so now we've got a big picture. It's the same city, I think, as a company that I used to work for, Equifax. They were based there. Maybe are still based there.
They are still based there. Yeah.
So, Kevin. Your DNA must, we just talked about this earlier, your DNA is the kind of I like to experiment with new things DNA. Is there a categorization that would put Kevin into that box somehow?
So one of the 8 traits that we measure, so the DNA system is a psychometric system, you know, to measure behavioral traits, and we measure 8 primary factors and 24 sub-factors, just for what it's worth. So there's 32 primary measurements there, and one of them is creativity, which is then broken down into imagination, enterprising, and then left brain, right brain. So if Kevin likes new ideas, he's likely to be highly creative.
Yes, yeah.
The question will then be is, what action does he take with the ideas? Is it just talking about them, or is it then actually investing in the ideas?
Yeah, that's where we got to in the conversation. But we'll reserve that for another time, unless you want to talk about it, Kevin.
No, I think that'd be a conversation that would take over the entire podcast, Graham.
It probably would, actually, yeah.
Time. But that is an interesting thing, and Graham and I, earlier this afternoon, ended up in a conversation that was around a new business offer that Graham's got, and me trying to use it from something in my business, and then talking about the website that I was using it on and the purpose for that website, and me saying to Graham, well, I'm just playing at the moment, Graham, and Graham telling me, well, I've got to have a purpose for playing, and I'm me saying back to him, well, at the moment I haven't worked that out, I'm just playing.
I think all of us have different DNA by definition, almost, and the whole idea is that your methodology enables companies to understand its employees and maybe the way in which they could interact, or maybe with customers and the best people,
customers,
all that kind of stuff. So you actually bring value, don't you, by understanding respective traits of people. But how fair is it? Sorry, let me try and. We're currently watching at home this, the American Office, which is desperately funny. It really is. It's really, it makes me cringe at times. but this is an office and they're all characters and they all have different traits. And it's almost like you could come along and give them, you know, apply your technology with them, and it'd be really interesting, just the kind of dynamics that we know from the show that could be predicted from DNA behavior.
Absolutely, it can be predicted. So all of these behaviors can be predicted. And I think that the question really comes down to is how much do you want to guess it versus actually know it and know the strength of it? Because also humans can be quite good at disguising certain behaviors in a setting. You know, I think if you talk about the workplace, it's pretty easy for somebody to come to an interview for a sales position and be very charming. And, you know, the interviewer might say, yeah, a salesperson's supposed to be out there with people, but not know whether the person's competitive or not, not knowing whether they're going to handle a rejection or not. And those things are much more deep-rooted. And so that if you think about it, you know, we often use the iceberg example. What you can see 10%, but there's 90% below. And some of that below is quite deep. And that's what you actually need to know because it does come to the surface and in a way crash the Titanic. And that's you know, that's the whole idea of using a system to discover it. But
I'm just sorry, well, that's the kind of behind the po point originally was that will people surrender that deep beneath the iceberg or the lower part of the iceberg? Will they surrender that information, or is it kind of clever questioning that sort of they betray it anyway?
Yeah, so people aren't going to honestly, if depending on how the questions are asked. So this is a part of the whole thing around psychometrics comes back to the question asking. And that was something that was very big for me at the start when I started coming up with my theories about wanting to understand a person's natural hardwired behavior, which is how they behave more under pressure. It's very instinctive versus how they learn to behave. Because in some ways, you know, a lot of us have learned to be socialized in a better way to respond, not everybody, or to be detailed when we need to be, but under pressure, are we going to be that way? And so what we do with the questions is we ask people to choose between three singular words. So think about this as an example. You've got to choose between aspiring, detailed, and patient. What are you most like out of those three? And what are you least like?
I see.
Now, Hugh will be aspiring and lower on patient, but Kevin on those might be more patient. And then less detailed, for example. And once you do that, once you answer questions like that enough times, we've now built up the psychometric picture that shows how you're going to behave. So that's what's then getting to the deeper roots. But if we said, you know, how are you going to respond if you lost a job or you know, if your mother broke her ankle, are you going to stop work and go and help her, or are you going to keep on doing your tasks? I mean, but that's what a lot of the questions are, and people build
It's
tools
like
out of that.
if they sort of answer with I typically go postal, then basically you've got a problem, haven't you? At the end of the day, they're going to really go mad. But you know, I think I suppose a fair number of people probably do lose it a little bit, and I just, you know, is it? I'd love to think this really does work, and how can you? If I'm a sort of slightly skeptical person, and I suspect a lot of your clients are going to be that before they've heard the logic, what is it? What gets them, Hugh? What is it that you can say? You see that last thing where you said three words. I was getting there. That was helpful. But what is it? What's going to push me over the edge that becomes like a one of your one of your customers? How why would I pick you as a somebody who's going to help my business grow, make more money, have better individual relationships? Why is that?
So it all starts in my mind. It starts with the CEO, and the CEO is the ultimate driver of the culture in the business. And if he or she has the perspective that in mindset perspective that they are interested in their personal growth, they are interested in how their employees are looked after, how they're engaged with. Are they in the right roles to flourish, if you want to call it that, from a performance perspective? They're interested in how the internal communication flows are going to be internally. And in particularly, if you're in a change situation and you need to deliver a big message, well, that big message needs will only be heard by potentially 40% of the universe, and you need the other 60% to hear it too. And so this gets to customization, or what, or my theme of personalization. So if we want to get people all on the same page and they're all different, we've got to personalize the experience in some way. And so that's they're the strategic reasons. And if you can do that, then that is going to increase revenues and productivity, performance, metrics. That's sort of at a holistic level. Now, if you come down and say, okay, others might come in and say the same thing. And then I've then got to say, well, why DNA behavior? And then what, our answers are going to be more at the level of, okay, the way in which we believe it's absolutely important everybody goes through the profiling, it starts with the leader. And if you're not prepared to share yours, this is always going to fall down. So we're going to help you with authenticity and transparency with this. So that's building a psychologically safe culture. So in the end, the success of a psychometric measurement approach in a business is going to come down to psychological safety. And in fact, the success of a business rests a lot on psychological safety, because we need the idea people like Kevin being prepared to share their ideas, and then the skeptical people like you, Graham, being prepared and comfortable to raise a concern about a problem in something, so that the solutions then can form, and everybody moves forward. If the CEO is not prepared to handle all of that, then he or she is putting themselves on a losing path. But it's all the, in a way, it's the bedside manner of how this is done. Then I look at and say, okay, Hugh Massey actually comes from more of an accounting background.
Oh my
So
God.
we're not talking.
I always get finance people on here, Graham.
So we're not talking about a teddy bear's picnic therapy session here for every employee. We're also talking about how do the behaviors reflect themselves in the numbers. And so a little bit, I think, Graham, it's going back to something you said before. It's about causality and going deeper to where is the problem and why. Because behavior causes money issues, which is really what businesses are there for. But money has an impact on behavior itself. And so, that's a circle. But you could see how the finances of a company and how they need to be improved through the behavior of the people.
I earlier today, and I can see. We get our profiles done. The reason I have a certain amount of understanding of this is that I did an MBA, God knows, 20, 30 years ago, and I was working for Royal Mail at the time, big organization, postal authority in the UK. And in my part of the fiefdom, I did a similar. I want to say similar, but a profile of personalities at the board level, right? And what it did to say is that they were like, I don't know from memory, it was like 85% one type of org, one type of person, and maybe one person who was a little bit creative. The rest of them were operational and had a particular bent. And it was like this guy was the kicking, everybody else kicked him. But he was super bright and I really gravitated towards him. But some of the others were okay. But basically, it was disjointed as a leadership group. So I kind of have an understanding that by starting with that understanding, you can take some behavioral changes or you can make some behavioral changes. But boy, getting them to do that. Now, I'm not you, and I don't have your resources. But the one thing that sticks out to me on your web page, which is, by the way, DNA behavior spelt without a U, dot com. I mean, guy obviously doesn't know how to spell, but he's in America, so we'll let him.
Yeah, I've had to have a learn how to spell again.
But you use lots of Z's. Anyway, the thing is, the one thing that stuck out for me was 23% average revenue growth of customers. Now you're a customer and you're invested in this, and I can improve your revenue by a quarter over a, I don't know what's over what period, but basically over a quarter. That is impressive. If it can be tracked back to the behaviors that your product has produced. But that would get you an audience. It's got to do, hasn't it? I mean, Christ, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, that gets you an audience. And then what we're talking about there is to go the full way to get that result. And this is a difference in what we do, is that we're all about not only profiling the team. So you talked about Graham, the board. That's important because a lot of things work or go astray there. We need understanding, acceptance, and respect as part of the culture inside the business, the psychological safety. But the success or failure of a business at the end of the day rests on on the customers or the clients. And if the business and so a lot of the business problems really start there. Now you can say if the employees aren't happy, they'll be infecting the clients and whatnot. So employee experience is good, but really it's the clients that pay the bills. So what I advocate is that the business has got to, as they go through these exercises, is to profile the clients. Now, we've been very successful at that in wealth management, where a financial advisor or a wealth manager, banker, will get a client to go through the exercise to build a better relationship and to be known. But where we're moving more and more to is because of AI and the proliferation of technology. All of this profiling actually can be done up front now through our digital scan product. So when I mentioned before that if you go through the physical exercise of user participation, having to choose between the words, that can actually be done by AI now. Now, not as accurate, but that removes the friction. So you imagine you're a CEO and you've got 100 people or 500 people in your business. In the ideal world, everybody would go through the questionnaire and then you consolidate the results and you look at the analysis and break it down into teams and whatnot. But you can actually do that through the digital scan without bothering anybody and get a heat map up front. And then imagine you do that with your customers.
Go through this for the dig. What are you scanning here?
Basically, if we know the name of the person, where they work, and what role they're in, we can then go out to public data sources and get a whole lot of information about the person that will provide the insights to answer the questionnaire.
But hang on, in the world going forward, I mean, okay, if you went and looked at me, for instance, and went out and looked at what can you find out about Kevin, and you can probably find loads of articles and so on that.
I'm probably going to find you're an ideator, right? And creative.
But you're going to find that over the last 2 years, I have used AI to a huge extent to create those documents. So isn't this just AI marking AI?
To some degree, there can be elements of that, but the AI is now capable of knowing what your career history is, your life path, the types of podcasts that you do, the written work, and it can come up with an assessment as to the what your behavior would be. And with us, it then comes down to, it can the AI can be used to populate, if you want to call it that, or answer the questionnaire that's been psychometrically proven to be correct. What that allows us to do is to do this on a mass scale basis to understand groups of people, will help organizations understand groups of people.
Sorry, Kevin. Let's just say Kevin works with a group of 20 people. You've got Kevin's profile, but you haven't got the others.
I've got Kevin's, but let's say that Kevin knows those people, who they are, then we can get a digital scan on them. For example, I'm presenting at a conference on Tuesday morning to 522 CEOs in the financial services industry. I know all their names, where they work, what their exact role is in the company. I've plugged that into our system, and now I've got a readout on exactly who the audience is, plus an analysis of each one of them individually. If I happen to have one-on-one meetings, I know how to adapt.
So the way to get a good laugh is that you say, so Reg, you're sat in the third row over there. Did you bring your mistress with you? And like, 'cause you know the guys. Yeah, I mean, you could you're the guy who could seriously damage.
I could undress that person in the audience, essentially, right?
Absolutely. Now that because you've got that not because but they're CEOs, right? The worker ants or even the middle managers, would they be as visible?
Oh, you'd be surprised how much information is out there. I think that that's a good question. There's more information out there than you would realize, but the level of accuracy of the digital scan is not the same for every person, because it does depend, for some people, as you say, are more visible than others. But even for my wife, who hasn't worked in 17 years since we got married, we know where she worked and what she did, and that still provides an accurate picture. So not all housewives or home experience managers, as I like to say, are the same, just like not all CEOs are the same, right?
No, of course not, no.
Because Steve Jobs and Tim Cook at Apple are different people, and their measurements as CEOs come up different.
Okay. This is gonna be, I'd love to be a fly on the wall on your presentation next week.
Well, because they don't know that I'm going to do that.
Yeah, well, I can imagine they're clever.
We should
So
have
some of
been
them will not realize that you are. But Kevin, well.
should have been asking Hugh to come onto this podcast with digital scans done of you and I and see what
Oh, God knows if he has, but it wouldn't be that difficult, would it?
it.
But I mean, you just have to watch a couple of other episodes, what one grumpy bugger and one, so basically, different profiles. The general premise here is that you can profile to generate positive behavior. You know, people talk about this safe thing, which I think just a modern way of, get over yourself and get on with each other at the end of the day, and then that then begets better results, especially if you've mapped yourself into customers. And I think it's a smart idea, and it's not one that I'm totally unfamiliar with. So basically, from that point of view, I do see that there is some logical, but am I right, Hugh, that what you're trying to do is you're trying. If a company's got 200 employees, now if you take Equifax in the UK at the time, I think we probably had, I don't know, a couple of hundred, I don't know, a couple of hundred employees. How many would you know? And would you be able to create a really, before you asked anybody to do this, would you be able to walk in and say, by the way, you've got a pretty toxic culture? Not that they had, but parts of it were a bit challenging. And I just wonder whether or not you'd be able to pick that up before you even walked over the threshold.
I think so.
Wow.
And
Wow.
I shouldn't say I think so, I know so because I have before. And if I use this as an example, when I first started working with this type of methodology, I did a strategic planning session with the leadership team of a very large consulting firm. They're one of the sort of the top six, and their top 28 people were in the room
Wow.
with their CEO, and they were great at getting clients, and they had a hopeless at retaining them, and they had a revolving door. The people culture part was really bad, and they wanted to start to work on ways to undress that and deal with it. And what I quickly learned was that 24 of the 28 people in the room measured up low on trust. And so what you've got is, you can call it a bunch of bulldogs, very skeptical people. Now, being skeptical is a strength. You use that word today. You can be extremely discerning with it, questioning, exacting, play the right way. I am in that category. It's a superpower. But the other side of it is, used the wrong way, it can be very damaging in relationships. If you're not confident in the way you show up with others, and you don't demonstrate trust with other people, they're not going to trust you. And if that is built into the culture of the business, you got a massive problem, right?
Can I just pick on something there, Hugh? Because I was with a friend. She's this morning. I just bumped into her. We had a coffee, and basically, she said that she's learning to become a driving instructor. And I said, oh, that's really good. But this instructor used the F bomb every now and again. It was quite, and she's used to it. But what she found herself using the F bomb herself. So basically, it's the classic. The guy keeps swearing, and she starts to swear. So this firm, who probably Kevin probably worked for, by the way, but that's another story. But this firm, with all these lack of trust in people, they hire people like Kevin who is trustworthy, and before you know it, he's F-bombing. He's got lack of trust. Is that what's happening here? The culture is driving away the trust that you're hiring, so your levels of trust just fall, plummet.
I'd suggest there's even something else here, Graham. People recruit subconsciously other people that are like them. So
Yes, they do.
a group of similar traited managers,
Yeah.
they are going to recruit more of the same.
I agree with that, Kevin, but there's also going to be some bright people there who say, well,
Oh,
Chris, we've got to change this culture, get some trustworthy people in. And before you know it, they're F-bombing. This is, what I'm saying is that they become untrustworthy by untrustworthy because they can't operate in a trustful way because everybody else around them isn't. So I wonder whether or not they're doomed as an organization. Could they take something like you've got without senior level commitment to goodness knows what they would need to do? What would they need to be do? What would they need to do, Hugh? They can't wrap up and then start again, can they? The big organization.
No, you can't do that. But I think that's where then and you and this isn't about going and firing every person, but you've got to, starting at the top, put in certain protocols of the way in which people are going to show up. And if the leader themselves doesn't model the right behavior and show up the right way with this, so if he is going postal at people, writing nasty emails and whatnot, then nothing's going to change, right?
Get that.
So it's got to start at the top. You think you then got to put the right people in at the right layer of the business that know how to manage others with emotional intelligence. You've got to have a people culture manager. That's what I tried. That consulting firm we talked about, I tried to get them to put a people culture manager in place, and they wouldn't do it at the end.
In Scouts, we used to say it's like a girl guide's bra, it just won't stretch that far. The thing is, your DNA behavior just can't stretch that far, can it? You can't do everything.
You can't. And so what we encourage people to do is to, there needs to be built understanding, acceptance, and respect. I think it goes back to that board situation you had where most of the people are operational and you had the lone ranger who's creative. If you can build understanding, acceptance, and respect in there, then you would know how to accept that that creative person is going to bring up different ideas, has got a different pattern of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that on some things he might be right, but also at the same time, it's incumbent on him to understand, or her to understand, you can't be an idea a minute and just keep throwing out ideas and changing course on everything because it seems the smart thing to do, right? So, but I think that's, but what I basically teach people, it's fairly simple, and it's in our book on DNA behavior leadership that you can get off our website.
Okay.
Is you're either results driven or you're relationship driven, or, you know, 20% of the people are in the middle. And if you're a results driven leader like Hugh, you are going to need to modify some of your style to be more approachable for building relationships. Because at the end of the day, approachability is probably the number one trait for building the right culture.
Mm.
And comes with that psychological safety.
You, I get this completely from the point of view of you look at the whole organization, you look at the balance of individuals in the organization, you look at the culture overall. You've probably got some sort of problem there that you want to solve that says,
yeah,
the organization should be doing this, but for some reason it isn't. But flip this the other way around. I'm an individual. Can I get anything just for me out of doing this? I mean, I am actually a lover of these psychometric things, and I've done some that I think have been, yeah, that's interesting, but I haven't got a clue what to do with it, like Myers-Briggs, DISC, which I found very useful in working out how to communicate with people. But the one that I really love is StrengthsFinder 2.0, which has told me a lot about me, my strengths, and how to work best with them. What would I get something out of your DNA behavior system?
So you know, we are strengths focused, like StrengthsFinder would be. We deal with communication like DISC does. I think our measurements go in further depth than DISC in terms of behavioral traits. DISC is telling you four traits, you know, the DISC, but it's not, we're telling you eight primary traits measured on each side. So we're also saying, you know, you can be a high D, but what about the low D? Well, you don't want to, and no one wants to be called a low D, but the other side of the high D is, in our system, would be being, you know, you're either take charge, which is the D, or you are cooperative. Well, there's certain strengths in collaboration and consensus building in being cooperative. So the language that we use is different, and we never use the word weakness. It's about struggles. And so the issue I have with StrengthsFinder is I think, look, it's a great instrument, and really the story about all of us is built up from probably a few. But you can't just operate in strengths and be blind to the strengths overdone. Because let's say that you've got a strength in communication or in idea creation, right? What happens when you go too far with that blindly? That's got an impact on people, and you need to understand how that impact's going to come up, because that's then also going to be where the behavioral modifications are required.
Yeah, but you can't make a donkey a horse, though. It's going to be really difficult for somebody who's got a particular trait to weaken it without them saying, oh, this company's not for me. I, that's the kind of thing that worries me about this, that if what the DNA mix is saying about Kevin or me or whatever is that this guy can't fit because he's too long on ideation. Yeah, that's why I came in. Oh no, we can't deal with you because you're upsetting others with all these fancy ideas. Out. That's the. I mean, maybe I've got on the wrong stick here, Hugh. But it's isn't this a practical thing that if you're going to say this is my organization, these are the outliers, these are the ones who are causing the bottlenecks or whatever the toxic behavior. If it's a negative, but if it's something like ideation or coming up with new ideas for a company, what I mean, what CEO in the world would say that's bad?
Yeah, well, I think that a CEO is not going to say it's bad, but I've seen people that have got great ideas every week or every day running into the CEO or to the leadership team
Oh,
with those ideas,
right.
thumping the table. We need to do this now. And I heard this person and I saw this tool. And it's not they're not managed their ideation the right way or channeled it the right way. And that's an emotional intelligence issue as much as you need people who are great communicators. There's a day that people who talk a lot say too much and they lose a sale, right?
Oh, for sure.
And so it's all it is that you need to operate and be able to flourish in your sweet spot or your set of strengths. But you also need to know, be able to know, manage the impact of those. And there are some days where you need to back off on that, right? It's like being skeptical. Yeah, that can lead to being very questioning but if you don't ask the questions the right way, you cut people to ribbons and destroy relationships. So
We've
it's
been doing that for 10 years on this podcast. Don't worry about that. I mean, we're
so I think it's more about knowing how to operate in your strengths, but when to flex or modify in the situations that it's required. That's really what I'm getting at. And if you don't pay it, so you can't just say, let's operate in strengths and then do that in a vacuum or without any awareness of what the consequence of that will be and say, that's okay, I caused you harm because I'm working in my strengths.
I get you.
That doesn't work, right? But that's where some people have been giving themselves permission out of strengths-based tools to do that. Well, the tool said I'm strong in this, so you go and sort out your problems. Well, no, you've got to carry yourself the right way with it, is really what I'm getting at. That's the emotional intelligence that's it. And so therefore, you've got to have balance. Yeah.
Hugh, how long is it between you walking over the threshold, you kind of getting into their conversation so that they'll adopt DNA behavior techniques, analysis, between that, and let's just say everything is going to go with a fair wind and the 23% revenue growth? How long? 10 years, 2 years.
No, not 10 years.
No,
Not ten
I,
years.
I've, I mean, you've been going for a while, but I mean, how
No,
long?
I think what you're talking a 2 to 3 year commitment, certainly minimum 12 to start really seeing results. But it's 2 to 3 years and then real traction's going to come at that point. But that's also going to depend on the CEO at the top.
And
But the
do you go
result
to,
of, and
sorry.
I would say this, it is harder to build it up because building up trust is hard and getting everybody in the right slots and comfortable with that environment. It's hard, but you could lose it really quick.
I
Lose
can
it quicker than you can make it, if that's a way of putting it.
See, Hugh, how out of this you might identify a few quick wins. You might see square pegs in round holes very easily. But I can also see that there are teams where you might have to fundamentally not modify the behaviors, but change the makeup. And that means that you've got a recruitment exercise going on, and you've got things taking place that are going to take a while to come to fruition. So
That's right, and you're dead right there, Kevin. This could, I would say, the most likely areas where changes are going to be required are in the sales area, and then in the customer or client support areas.
So on your site, you've basically got a comment there that says the direct correlation between leadership financial behavior and increased company valuation. It's just a list of key findings, but leadership financial behavior and increased company valuation. Are you saying that the leader has got to be a bit like a CFO?
No, we're not saying that the leader needs to be a CFO, but we're saying if you look at the particularly the C-suite leadership team of a company, starting with the CEO, they drive company culture. And so across that leadership, and they drive the company results in terms of financial performance. They set the policies and procedures, the strategies, etc. So their view on money, their money attitudes are important. And let's take it that one key metric, for example, because we've talked about it today, is innovation focus. To what degree is the senior leadership team prepared to invest in innovation? In other words, to take risk on innovation. That's very important in today's AI world. Or to what degree are they prepared to manage costs, so fiscal control? And so we see some leadership teams where that's not very strong, and you see the expenses of the company are high. And the expenses of the company are high. Why? Because the leaders have allowed them to be. Now, every business, I suppose, or type of business might have different cost structures, but inherently, right? If you're selling tractors, it's different to selling technology. But relative to your competitors, are you doing better or worse? And that's going to come down to the behavior of the leadership team and how they deal with money. And that's what we tracked across the S&P 500, and we've done it with private companies as well. It consistently comes out. And if certain traits are stronger in that leadership team,
So, have you,
they do better. The bottom line is better than their competitors.
so if you have that a bit, sorry, Kevin, if you have that ability, do you have a fund somewhere, or are you advising a fund of funds or whatever? Are you advising invest in these companies, disinvest in these because of these behaviors?
I have done some of that, and I'm in the middle of discussions with people about setting up a fund to do that. I've also been helping some venture capitalists and private equity firms with this because it's fundamental to what they do. We're at the early stages of this because this is a new horizon, if you want to call it that, in the deployment of human behavior.
But it's where you want to go, yeah? Isn't
It's
that
where we want to go because this is where, I suppose coming back to why work with DNA behavior. Yeah, we can work on, I'm going to say, the more vanilla things that we've talked about today, even though they are very difficult, fundamental. But that's where I alluded to before, that there is the financial piece is where we go that makes us different. And I think the other part's dealing with customers.
Now,
And knowing customers.
that dealing with venture capitalists, things like that, is a very interesting one, Hugh. I'm thinking to the link back to valuations. Because if you're an early stage business, you're valuing that business very much on the forecasts and projections that the management team give you, and you haven't got the hard results to go on. Now, you've got that extra tool in your arsenal as you're assessing, do we as venture capitalists ever invest in this business? Having that extra something that relates the behaviors of the founders back to likely growth of the business, and are they likely to deliver what they're saying in these projections and prospectuses and so on? That's powerful.
Yeah, and you're right, and you know, because at the end of the day, a venture capitalist is invest, and same with the private equity investors, that which is just a different stage and different sort of style of financing, but it's all it's much the same stuff. They're investing in the people at the end of the day, and that, you know, in certain cases, you've got leaders that are not they've been good at generating growth to a certain level, but they're not able to go to the next levels. They're either toxic or they're
Well,
over-controlling.
we've definitely discussed that on this podcast several times. You know,
Yeah.
those people just can't get over the million or get over the 5 million or 10 million. That type of CEO, and then you have to hand it on to somebody else who can. But that a lot that crikey, that puts you into a heck of a position as well.
Yeah.
You know, spot. Because he's not going to admit to it necessarily, or maybe he will, or she will. But basically, you come along and say, out, promote, you know, it's you know, that kind of a approach. What power? Now, can your system genuinely deliver consistent results in that area? Because if it can, you know, tell me where I write my check to your fund. Because you shouldn't. You're it's a bit like. You're not going to lose many matches, are you?
No, you're getting very early predictive insights on what's going to happen, which then allows you to make decisions. And then it's a matter of probably when do you make the decision if the leadership's not changing. And when we've got a fund that's in a place that can take investment money, I'll be letting you know, Graham.
Yeah, well, please do, because honestly, mate.
Let's turn this around a bit and have some fun, Hugh. If you can go and get,
Me have
you've
fun.
been having fun, Kevin. Crikey.
If you can get profiles of people digitally, okay, go take Graham's beloved Leeds United. Let's have a behavioural profile of the whole football club and work out what they've got to do to avoid being relegated this
Oh,
season.
for goodness sake. You know, that's well, we'll find out tomorrow night if we can beat West Ham. So, but that's another story. But when this comes out, we'll know whether we've beaten West Ham. So basically, okay, where I'm fascinated with this because you're moving. We have to draw this to a close in a second, Hugh. But the opportunity it seems that you've carved out, can't others do the same, or is it just that you've built this? Understanding of behavior. Can others do the same? Are others doing the same?
Possibly, I think it's possible others could do it. Is anybody doing it in the way, you know, in the way we're doing it? No. Are others, so let's put it this way, are others possibly able to profile the customer? Yep. But and some people do it, but the reporting and the setup is not something that they design their systems to do. So it's really in a way, it's a forced application rather than a natural application. But to say that no one's doing it would be wrong, but no one's
You know, I
working on a mass scale, right?
talked with part of my day job is that people come to me and ring me up and say, can I supply them with high net worth investors? Because I've got property, I've got an early stage, whatever it is. It's basically all kinds of people looking for money. Not just that, but that's one of the applications. I would love to take the better part of 500,000 high net worth investors, and they're kind of on a scale, run them through something like this. And you say, well, first of all, we've got quite a bit of information anyway, but basically you then say, likely to be, you know, take more
Yeah.
risk, likely not to take more risk, etc.
Yeah.
Wow. What a powerful thing that would, you know, and I think there'll be a lot of people out there be prepared to pay for that because.
That absolutely that can be done, and that can be done for large pools of people. So I think that's where we have an advantage. And then the whole leadership, financial behavior, no one's gone into that space.
Wow.
And partly because, well, no one's thought to do it. But also we have the metrics and built up over 20 years plus We have the digital scanning capability to do it, which no one else has developed. But could others come and do it in the future? Yeah, but they're going to have to spend a lot of time and money doing it.
I think you're in a very, very enviable position. Not bad for an Aussie. You've done well, lad.
Positioned for a good future. I think the next 5 years is going to be interesting.
Well, Hugh Massey, apparently before I joined this conversation, Kevin sort of said that your roots are in Yorkshire, but that does not surprise me because it's only that's the thing that's given you blessed you with skill. So,
They're actually, just for the record, they're actually in Manchester. That's where our family came from w in the William Conqueror days, and went and settled there, and were given lands in Chester. There's a town there, and I've been to it, but
Well,
that's
that's
actually
nothing
the
to do
deep
with
roots.
Yorkshire. That's that's like insulting me. That's basically that's the other side of the hill. Anyway, but nonetheless, we've liked you, Hugh Massey.
Well, I've had fun with you, both of you today. I really enjoyed it, and very insightful questions. And
Well.
we cut to the chase, and it's been good.
So, Graham, gosh, that was one interesting conversation.
It was. I think the opportunity, he's almost slipped in to a place that people, I don't know, haven't been able to get into before. I mean, yes, I've come across all, I mean, you've come across all these profiling techniques, and but this is somehow deeper, quicker, smarter.
It's that idea of the digital scan, Graham. And it's amazing how big a footprint every individual's got, because nearly everybody's written something on Facebook or LinkedIn or in a forum about something. Over time, search engines have indexed all of those things, unless they're in absolutely private groups that search engines are banned from.
But
And they manage
this
to link that back to certain individuals.
the opportunities I think are there, and we've mentioned one or two of them, and to do with I guess profiling investors, for instance. And I think that would be a really interesting application from my point of view, and for a lot of other people as well, because people are always looking for people to invest in new companies and new schemes, etc. And if you can select fewer people to get more of the people you want, wow. That has real weight to it, and it's got margin, it's got value, and so therefore you can provide that value to the people consuming that. So yeah, I mean, it's been fascinating. I'll be honest with you, Kevin, far more fascinating than I thought it was going to be at the beginning of the podcast. But boy, it just seemed to take, it just took off somewhere along the line.
I'm tempted to go across the website and download the free book you was talking about. I think that could be an interesting read.
Yeah, I do as well. Well, on today's performance, we've had a an Australian. I thought you said he was from Yorkshire, but he obviously was not. He was over on the wrong side of the bloody Pennines. But
You don't expect Australians living in America to know very much about geography, Graham.
no, I know, but Manchester in Yorkshire, no, I don't think so. But nonetheless,
At
we'll
least he
educate him.
didn't admit to being a Manchester United supporter.
Probably was underneath, but nonetheless, some fantastic ideas that he's got, and I'm sure he's going to do extraordinarily well over the next few years, and possibly change the world in some ways, because if he's got the leadership in that field, then boy, that's going to help a lot of people. So on that note, Kevin, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.